almost game time in the NBA, and plenty of renewed MVP debate surrounding some of the best and brightest out there. The MVP eligibility period is closed.
Done.
There will be no more deciding based on the next eight games that we see inside the bubble. And so it's who you got. We'll circle back on more of that with Brian Windhorst in a little bit here. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Our thanks to Dan Graziano, Bomani right. Jones already. Brian Windhorst going to join us in about a half hour here to help us break down that MVP discussion, some of the other league awards. Booger McFarland with us at 9 o'clock, and Terry Francona going to join us at 9:30 Eastern. Take us inside, you know, what we can expect from this upcoming MLB season.
And we're going to break down. We have some of the local people for the teams breaking down the teams that are in the bubble. We're going to get to Portland in just a few minutes here because we're looking at it as a refresher course. Kind of, you know.
The Cliff Notes version of your returned NBA play.
And if anybody knows this show or the Golics, we love Cliff Notes and we use them a lot. But before all that happens, there has to be an announcement here just because, well, there's only about, you know, eight shows left of this show, number one, and eight shows left of my 23 years of doing morning radio at ESPN Radio. And ESPN Morning Radio started with myself and Tony Bruno back in 1998. To which, Mike, you were 9, Jake was 8, and Sydney was 4. And one of the things that I definitely wanted to do when I started doing this a couple of decades ago was involve my family in everything about the shows. And
harvest us for content.
That's exactly right. And listen, I was up front with you guys. I told you all. Anything you do is content for the show.
Yeah,
right?
We didn't have a say in it. You just told us.
No, but you were told.
That's
okay.
Fair.
You were told. That's
fair.
All. From parent to kid, that's all that matters, is you were told. And outside of from the professional side of the best part of it is being able to work with my son, which is a very cool thing. There have been the incredible moments away from this show that we've gotten to share with everybody, whether you wanted to or not, it was shared with you. And through that has been a lot of times of the kids growing up from, you know, grade school to high school to college to being adults.
Well, and it wasn't because people got to know that. We would see them out in public and people would come up and say hi to you and talk about the show. And they would also look at me, Jake, and Sydney and be like, oh, yeah, I heard about how swimming is going for Sydney or how, you know, recruiting is going for Mike and Jake. And so it did become that sort of thing where people along the way were invested enough to notice.
It's one of the more amazing things I've seen with the response from people out there who have listened to the show for a long time and talking about that, knowing it's coming to an end and my time on radio is coming to an end, of people saying how much they know the family and the kids. And with that, we did it a few years ago when Jake and Jenny got married. They just had their 3-year anniversary on July 15th. So many great things in life. And Sydney, my youngest, anybody followed her swimming and growing up and all that she went through? Well, she's been dating Ben Broniker for a couple of years. He's a tight end for the Bears. He played tight end at Harvard. And when he's done with football, he is going to medical school to be an infectious disease doctor. Talk about not one of these things doesn't belong in this family.
Yeah, dear God.
Yeah, I mean, incredible. But last night, Ben proposed to Sydney. So they are engaged. Sydney said yes. Sydney threw a couple of lines in there.
Yeah, a couple of her immediate reaction is the least surprising thing ever, as is the shock and surprise that my mom immediately spun this into content, sat everyone down, and made us record Sorry in Advance, the Golic Family Podcast, right after that. So you'll be able to download that later today and this week. We get an immediate game breakdown of that moment there. And it is the least shocking thing ever, as my mom has producered this thing into existence to begin with.
It is a full engagement podcast going back to Jenny and Jake's engagement, Ben and Sydney's engagement, my engagement. Hopefully in the future, your engagement, which now your mother has soul eyes looking
you know
at you.
This is about them. We don't need to make this about
you.
Me.
But Ben did a great job, took Sydney to the place where he first went with her when he came to Connecticut to visit when they first started dating. He did a great job. And yes, a couple of months ago, he did ask my permission to marry Sydney. We had a great chat. He's a wonderful young man, wonderful family as well. Couldn't be happier that he'll be marrying Sydney. Couldn't be happier that I can finally cut up the credit cards that Sydney has been using, though she's thinking of pushing the wedding off for a couple of years so she can keep using the credit
card. She's really trying to max that out. We said it should be the ceremony before she walks down the aisle. You cut the credit card in half so everyone sees her walking in and go, oh, Sydney's so emotional. She's so excited to marry Ben. It's like, no, she just said goodbye to the dad's credit card for the rest of her life.
The Amex is gone. But so just another great thing for me and my wife that has happened to see. Whenever you see one of your kids happy, you can't help but be happy. So Sydney is very happy. She said yes. Ben, again, is a great guy. And we did do a podcast right after it. With about 3 bottles of champagne and some Moscow mules. So it was interesting. And Sydney gave Evan a whole lot of work to do to produce this thing, to beep out some of the words she used.
Yep. Have the dump button ready on this one for your car ride. But again, congratulations to Sydney and Ben. Super excited for both of them. Pumped to have Ben on board in the family in all this one. And continue to send us at Golic and Wingo your bad engagement stories.
Yeah, because I have one. I'll get to it again. Yeah. Mine was easily one of the worst of all time. Now, it worked. She's... Maybe out of mercy, stayed with me for 33 years. But,
yeah,
you know.
I can say we're still allowed to go back and analyze the process
exactly,
here. So at
Golic
and Wingo with those. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Nature Valley. Whether you're taking on the trail or your terrace, your deck or the dock, Nature Valley Crunchy Granola Bars will help you make the most of your outdoor time, because a crunchy bar tastes like summer wherever you are. So we mentioned we're getting you ready for the NBA resumption. Brian Windhorst going to join us in a little bit here. But we wanted to give you the Cliff Notes version on the teams from a basketball sense, where we left off with these rosters, health-wise, and what's expected of everyone going into the bubble. Today, we wanted to focus on some of the Western Conference teams that are on the outside of the playoffs looking in right now, trying to play their way into that spot. Next up with our status update, we already gave you the Phoenix Suns. Here is the Portland Trail Blazers.
Golic and Wingo NBA status update. Portland Trail Blazers.
I'm Travis Simonis, the radio play-by-play announcer for the Portland Trail Blazers. Blazers were 29-37, 3.5 games back of the Grizzlies when the NBA World stopped back in March. With 16 games left, a favorable schedule, and improving health, there was hope in Rip City the Blazers have reached the playoffs for the 7th straight year. 4.5 months later, the Blazers have new life. While Rodney Hood is still months away from his return from an Achilles injury, and Trevor Ariza and Caleb Swanigan have opted out for the restart, 2 starters will be back. Center Yusuf Nurkic, who broke his leg 16 months ago, and forward Zach Collins, who missed the last 63 games with a shoulder injury, will both be back with the team, giving some desperately needed depth to the front court to go along with Hassan Whiteside. Damian Lillard has been on a mission all year, averaging a career-high 29 points and 8 assists, and had a 6-game stretch in January where he dropped over 40 points a game, including a franchise record 61. And don't forget about a guy we've never seen before, skinny Carmelo Anthony, who will likely go back to his familiar small forward spot. And it comes down to this. Have the same record or better than Memphis, New Orleans, and Sacramento, and they'll get into the play-in scenario with the Grizzlies for the right to play the Lakers. The expectations in Rip City are simple. Get to the playoffs and beat LA's worst nightmare.
So, again, this is the tough part for them. When the pandemic stopped ball, there was about 19, 20 games left, and they had, at that point, the 9th easiest schedule for the remaining part of the season to try and make a move on Memphis. Now, with the 8 games that are left and the schedule that went up, it's the 5th toughest of the teams in the bubble. So that made it difficult. Again, Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, all 3.5 games behind Memphis. Everybody trying to get to that 9th spot, and close enough if it's Memphis or if somebody jumps in before that for that 8-9 possible play-in game as well. And as you heard, because a guy is coming back from injury, you'll see Carmelo Anthony back at the small forward a little bit more.
Really living up to that name, small forward. We focused who else got skinny during the offseason?
Jokic.
Nikola Jokic. We focused much on his weight loss on all this one. Skinny Carmelo Anthony has now become a thing. And it's interesting. Small forward, I think he played 1% of his minutes, according to Cleaning the Glass, played 1% of his minutes at small forward over the course of the season. So small sample size, but the spot he's played before and all this. This is just amazing that we find the Trailblazers here at all. The team that was pushing Golden State in the Western Conference Finals last year, despite Dame Lillard being, because that run he talked about, I'd forgotten about that. Patently absurd what Dame Lillard was doing at times over the course of the season, but we know the fall from grace for them, for the Warriors, what's happened to that Western Conference final from last year has been precipitous.
So it's the battle for a number of teams. You know, we talk about Memphis, Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento. You want to throw maybe San Antonio in there. We kind of pushed Phoenix out of that, vying for that 8 slot to go and play the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah. Here's your reward here. The guy that, Brian Windhorst says, Don't worry about him winning the MVP right now. That's Giannis Antetokounmpo. We know what LeBron has been this
year. All about the ring.
And it's been a force of nature. All right, we will have another one of those for you coming up in about an hour. We'll have Brian Windhorst here with us soon. But we did have news. Overall, it seemed like a good news day for sports in a lot of ways yesterday with that NBA testing announcement. And with the NFL and the NFLPA seeming to agree on a fair amount of the things that had still been issues from this past weekend. The frequency of testing, the NFL saying daily testing for the first 2 weeks is something they'll sign up for after that, tied to a 5% positivity rate, where it would go to, as long as it's below that, testing every other day throughout this process, and a number of other things. But the preseason games that have been a hang-up, two preseason games that the NFL wanted in this situation, the players, because they wanted a longer ramp-up period, wanted no preseason games, and as of last night, Adam Schefter reported that the NFL had offered the players no preseason games.
Yeah, one of the things involved in that, and it's certainly something I don't think people think of right away, because you're talking about a number of practices to ramp up to regular season games. And if you have a preseason game, the day before that, you're not practicing. Obviously, the day of the preseason game, you're playing that preseason game. And the day after, you don't do anything. You have a day off. So there's 3 days there without – now, you do get a game in there, a preseason game.
Which the value of those reps may be greater than practice reps, who knows.
Than the 2 days, one day before and one day after, that you don't get. But I'm one, quite honestly, I would have liked to have seen one preseason game. I would have liked to have seen some hitting. I know the coaches are going to talk about – And also remembering this new CBA from 2011, new CBA, it's basically there's no two-a-days. You don't wear less practice time. You don't put on pads twice a day. You can have two practices, but the second one is a walkthrough. Only one is in pads. So is a lot of that going to go to the starters and the key backups, the back end of the roster? You're not going to be able to set very well, especially with your rookies and or free agents trying to make up the back half of the roster. And I know a lot of people don't care about that end of it, but I certainly do. I know you do. And those are jobs out there for people to have that aren't going to get a great look at something like that. How much more are players hitting in practice? They can hit more in practice, but is it just going to be the starters? What can you work on? You're talking about 14 padded practices. What do you accomplish in that amount of time? How is your team built from veteran to youth to how that will affect you? I think there are a lot of things involved in here. I really would have liked to have seen one preseason game in this. Maybe that's just wishful thinking to think it could have helped some by getting some hitting in. Because you can go full go in practice, but you're never going full go in practice because there's no cutting in practice. You're not tackling in practice. So you're never going to get that. So the first time that's going to happen is going to be a regular season game. This is literally going back to college. Literally going back to college and what you're going to do. Though in college, they hit a lot more in practices than the NFL does to try and get ready for that. So, and it's a different year. It's a strange year. I get it. So things are going to be different. But I guarantee you, leading up to that and then in that, you are going to see more injuries than you normally do.
And maybe we can anticipate that. That's why the players were so married to this idea of a longer ramp-up, because J.C. Treader and others have echoed that, the worry that injuries are going to be on the uptick. But maybe we will see a better emphasis or more emphasis on the physicality of those practices, because there are other people like you that are concerned. Former NFL offensive lineman Jeff Schwartz joined Freddie and Fitzsimmons last night. And let's just say he is a bit concerned on the effect this will have on some teams.
The Chiefs have 20 of 22 starters coming back from the Super Bowl team. They're going to be fine. The Ravens, they're going to be fine. The Saints will be fine. All these teams that know how to practice, that know how to be efficient, that know what they're doing, that have great communication between players and coaches will be great. Young coaches, young quarterbacks, good luck. It's going to be a disaster. I mean, are you telling me that in 14 real practices, Joe Burrow is going to be ready to play an NFL game week one against, I don't even know who they're playing, you know, seeing a zone blitz for the first time that he hasn't seen in practice yet because they haven't practiced everything yet? Like, it's going to be really, really tough for young players to make the team, first of all, and then when they actually have to play, to know what they're doing.
Real quick, the Cincinnati's first game is at home against the Chargers, and then they play the Browns, and then they play the Eagles. So, and I completely agree with what he's saying, depending on where your team is.
Yeah, and I understand the point about the difficulty for guys making the team. I think so much of that is going to be tied more to the limited number of reps leading up to this. You're going to have to max out what you're doing with your starters, and you're going to have to get creative. And I think, just like we saw in the process leading up to the draft, teams that are more competent, that figured out creative ways to go back and scout players who they weren't going to see at pro days, who had been doing their due diligence on those guys going back into the college season when you're supposed to be doing it. Like, not all scouting departments are created equal.
No, they are not.
Not all scouts are doing the work necessary to go out there and give you results for the team. But the teams that found creative solutions found ways to have great drafts. And those names aren't surprising to anybody when you look at the Baltimores of the world and the other teams that we've lauded throughout this process. And this is going to be no different. The teams that look at the rules that they're given, and Dan Graziano said, a lot of coaches are chomping at the bit waiting, tell me how I'm supposed to do this
right,
so I can figure out the way to structure my practices. The teams that are creative and structuring that are going to figure out, all right, how do I create reps for the young players that I want to get looks at? How do I make sure that my young quarterback is going to get enough time under task and all this for me to feel comfortable throwing out there at the start of the season? Now, that's not going to be everyone. In the case of bad teams that draft near the top, they're bad for a reason, because right, that might not be the case. But I look at it and say, based off all that one, it's easy to see. The Giants, Panthers, Browns, and Bengals are in a very tough position. I think those are the teams in the toughest position heading into the season, probably, when you look at the makeup there between coach and quarterback.
Giants, you said?
Giants, so you say Joe Judge going into his first season as the coach there.
Second year quarterback.
We hear all the time how important that second offseason is, and Daniel Jones has been shorted the opportunity to be in the facility full-time, being that starter going into his second year in a new system.
Carolina, new coach. Coach coming from college and Matt Rhule with a new quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater.
And a lot to fix over
there. And a whole lot of change that has gone on in Carolina. I agree. What was the third team?
The third team for me, the Browns.
Cleveland Browns. I mean, listen, they had a phenomenal offseason. No doubt about it, in getting more pieces of the puzzle. And the good thing about some of those pieces is they're veterans, and I think that helps. Certainly they have the rookie O-lineman that they have to put in, but Conklin a veteran, Hooper a veteran. Guys are adding to that offense. So I do think that does help them, even though it's a new system.
It does, but it's a new staff. And for Stefanski, while we're all hopeful and we enjoy the things we saw in Minnesota, remember, we enjoyed the things that we saw offensively with Freddie Kitchens at the helm as a coordinator. And then you get there, and even with having a lot of quality pieces like they had last year, implementing that was still a difficult part of this process. And so I have concerns, again, with the limited amount of time with a team that's in a lot of people are putting pressure on.
Oh,
expecting the playoffs in that situation.
Yes.
Expecting Baker Mayfield to get back to rookie year form in a lot of this. And then the Bengals, the obvious choice. Zach Taylor in year two.
I mean,
Joe Burrow going into that one, an offense that's looking for really an identity.
Because
now,
we do think they're just going to put Joe Burrow in there. He is just going to be the guy right off the bat. Finley is the backup right now, the kid from North Carolina State.
I think he was a fourth or fifth round pick for them last year.
So it's going to go to Burrow, and you want to talk about learning on the fly. People are wondering about, I don't, but people have said, what about New England? For the first time in forever, they're getting ready to use a different quarterback, right? Now, I know when Brady was suspended, they had to get ready for that as well, and they used a couple of quarterbacks in Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett, and things went pretty well for them. But either Jarrett Stidham, if Cam, for whatever reason, isn't ready to go, but I think he'll be ready to go, and then Cam, who is learning the new system. I, for one, have zero worry. Let me underline zero worry.
None.
About them being ready. I don't know what the product will be, but as far as being ready with how Bill Belichick, we talk about preparedness and how you take situations. This guy, if it's Cam, we'll have Cam ready. You know, you're in that building. You can be doing a lot in that building. It's not you're there for 3 hours and you go home. There's going to be a lot, and Bill expects a lot of you and puts a lot on you. So from the standpoint of learning, I think they're going to be just fine, because that's Bill Belichick.
Golic and Wingo is presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs, for protection on the road and on the water. See how much you can save in as little as 3 minutes at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. I would put...
And really quickly say, I'm not saying they're going to be this 14-2 team. I'm saying I still think they can be what they were going to be. I'm not expecting that learning curve out of that team.
I think there's going to be some learning curve, just because it's so different for everyone, and because the health of Cam Newton is something you haven't been able to explore yet as a team. I would put the Patriots, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Indianapolis Colts all in the same vein. Veteran quarterback goes to team with coach I trust and organization I trust. When you look at Frank Reich in Indianapolis,
right,
confirmed identity there that you add a very smart veteran piece to that's hoping to get a lift from some of those weapons. You can say the same things to a higher degree about Tom Brady and Bruce Arians and the combination that they're going to have. Not a lot of time together, but you trust the parts involved. New England, the obvious one in that situation, you're just a bit more concerned about injury.
The injury I can't do anything about. I'm talking about the aspect of Bill getting people ready to play.
Because then on the top end of this, you look at the teams that we expect to benefit. It's all the very good teams that return a lot of talent. It's the Ravens. It's the Chiefs. It's this one. The other one that would be interesting is that one, the Saints that are going to benefit from that. The Titans are an interesting one where they bring back a lot of the same pieces they brought back from last year. Some notable departures in that one.
Big on the D-line, big on the O-line, one each.
You were able to keep a lot of the core of your skill players that helped make last year such a success. And for a team that's in a division that's in flux right now after all the talent that left Houston also in that one and then is looking at that Colts team that we talked about as well, the Titans are an interesting one that were able to preserve a lot of that through their offseason, re-signing Ryan Tannehill and getting that deal done with Derrick
Henry. Yeah, they come back with the most continuity in that division for sure.
Yep, that one, the Buffalo Bills would fall into that category too. Of teams where I have some questions about the quarterback. See, there's all these different levels as you go through that because the Bills and Titans feel very familiar. Can Josh Allen keep progressing to keep up with all the weapons they put around him there on offense? A defense that played out of its mind and a secondary there that was otherworldly last year. And the Titans in a very similar vein. Do we trust Ryan Tannehill to do this all again? So I think you can clearly see the tiers here that are going to help or hurt based on the shortened NFL preseason.
Two teams where the expectations have really kind of risen this year. Cleveland, right? Number one. And then the Cardinals getting DeAndre Hopkins and the upside of Kyler Murray, you know, and how well that went the first year and the expectations the second year. Those two teams will be interesting because the arrow is pointing up for them, but with all that's going on, how much will that be suppressed a bit?
Yep. How much of a bump can teams like that expect? We certainly, as we talk about teams that are going to benefit, the 49ers deserve to be in that conversation.
Oh, yeah.
The Seahawks as well. So all the obvious answers in that one, but I think the teams we mentioned on the bottom end, interesting to keep track of as we start to get through this new and ever-changing process because the NFL's doctors made it clear a lot of stuff could change around this as we go along. All right, coming up next, we'll switch gears and head back to the NBA. Because is Giannis really the MVP slam dunk in all of this? One person says yes. Nothing is normal in 2020. I might have to get that tattooed just so I can remember everything that's transpired. And you know what? Actually, I want a chance to forget all that. It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. here. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Dad now openly guzzling donuts on air at this point.
Yeah. Jenny brought down some donuts. We're still in celebration mode for the Ben Broniker-Sidney Golic engagement that happened last night.
Celebration is directly tied to calories in the Golic house. Everyone should understand that. Carbs are a friend around here. Another friend around here is also our ESPN NBA insider, Brian Windhorst, who joins us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Morning, Brian. How you doing?
I saw that ring on Twitter. It's pretty impressive, I have to say.
Yeah, he did a good job. He did well.
Harvard kid, smart kid. He gets it.
There you go.
So yeah. we got lucky on that one, but appreciate that, Brian. And so, Brian, a lot made right now. The NBA announced, in addition to the great testing numbers that we'll get to in a second from yesterday, also that when it comes to the awards for the NBA, that the MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, all these other things will be based on this portion of the season that was already played, meaning the final eight games leading up to the playoff seeding won't be tallied into that. You were pretty adamant that this is already Giannis's award to win. For people that maybe have, you know, already lost what we saw from the early portion of this season, what about Giannis's year makes this just such a no-brainer?
Yeah, there's two reasons why I say that. Number one, there was some pretty effective straw polling done right before the shutdown by some places, including Tim Bontemps at ESPN. And the voters, the actual real people who would vote, were overwhelmingly in favor of Giannis. So part of that is me just saying that I am aware of what the voters are thinking. It's not even just an opinion. I'm just telling you which way I think it's going to go. I suppose things could have changed in 4 months, but LeBron's case hasn't improved. The other thing is Giannis is having a historically great season. And I understand why LeBron himself is a little bit frustrated, and he's been frustrated about the MVP vote consistently over the last 6 or 7 years. But there were times when LeBron won the MVP vote where guys behind him had seasons that would have been MVP years at other eras and other times, even in these years since. And LeBron was just great, especially those years in Miami. I mean, the last year he won the MVP, go look at the season that Kevin Durant had, and Durant couldn't break through because LeBron was just so great. His last MVP award was probably the total height of his powers. And so when you look at LeBron's season, it is very strong, and I compliment him on his defense. This is the best defense LeBron, I think, has played in about 6 or 7 years. But when you go look at Giannis, when you look at his numbers, when you look at his numbers versus his minutes per game, and then you also consider that he is probably going to be the defensive player of the year for a team that was on pace or very close to winning 70 games, it's a compelling case. And I think Giannis, my expectation is that Giannis will win it relatively easily.
And you just mentioned he may double dip with the defensive player of the year, you know, over a guy like Anthony Davis. If he gets to that point, Brian, where he wins a second MVP and they happen to win the title this year, does it then become harder for him to win subsequent MVPs?
Yeah, the one thing that you've seen now, so I've been an MVP voter for 17 years, and one thing that you always see, I'd like to think that I haven't fit into this, but, you know, I probably have, is that a lot of times the MVP isn't about just the numbers, it's about the story. Like, for example, LeBron, the year that really irks him he didn't win it was 2011, which was the 1 year out of 5 years he didn't win it when Derrick Rose did. And that year, the Heat were the villain story and the Bulls were the challenger story. And they won 60 games and there was the rise of this player from Chicago. And while Rose had a spectacular season, he was also a better story. And so sometimes the storyline makes a difference. Like, I will tell you that Kobe Bryant, the 1 year he won MVP, which was in 2008, he shouldn't have won it, in my opinion. That should have been LeBron's first MVP. LeBron he went 39-9 or 38-8 that year and carried the team to 45 wins. But Kobe had been denied the previous couple of years when he should have won it, but the story was better that year. So if you are, especially if Giannis doesn't win, I would say, and he will be viewed through the lens of, well, you've done well in the regular season but haven't delivered in the playoffs, I do think it will become harder for him because, and this happened to LeBron a little bit, you don't just compete with your other opponents who are next to you. You also compete with yourself from the past.
Talking to Brian Windhorst, our ESPN NBA insider with us. Brian, I'm curious in that regard too, and LeBron brought this up himself, and Kendrick Perkins brought this up yesterday too. Is there a reason that we're not doing the Eastern Conference slander with Giannis at the top of his game right now the way it always happened for LeBron?
Well, I mean, let's just... LeBron doesn't go to 8 straight finals if he's in the Western Conference. That's not an insult to LeBron. That's just true. I mean, 3 of those years he was in Cleveland and made to the finals, they did not beat the Warriors, which means that they would not have gotten out of the West. So LeBron's greatness and his portfolio, LeBron's greatness is not affected by being in the East, but his portfolio is affected having been in the East. And I will say that the first year LeBron went to the West, he did not make the playoffs. Now, he did have an injury, for sure, but, you know, because it is more challenging. So LeBron has a point there, but just because that's true doesn't take away from the great season that Giannis had, just like the 4 times LeBron won MVP in the East, by the way, in years where the East was nowhere near as competitive as it was this year. The East is way deeper, in my opinion, over the last few years than it was for most of LeBron's career. It doesn't take away from the season that Giannis had. And again, this happens every single year, especially when you have tight MVP races, which we don't always have. And again, I do not expect this to be a tight race. Saying that somebody is the second best player, or I shouldn't even say the second best player, because I think LeBron's still the best player, but saying that he is had the second best season is not an insult. Saying that I'm voting for you number 2 on the ballot out of 450 players is not dragging you down. I know it's perceived that way, and that's fine, but part of the reason that the media does this is because they have to be the ones to say, hey, we have an all-time great player here, but he's going to go second on my ballot because the other guy had a better season.
Brian, no doubt the testing is working in the bubble as we talk about that. And then back onto the court, 346 players in the league's bubble were tested, and there were no negatives as opposed to last time, 322 and two negative or two positive tests, and they weren't even yet inside the bubble. So that's all working well. We're finally getting to games. And with the eight regular season games, and we're talking about LeBron and we're talking about Giannis, would you be shocked if they played all eight games? I mean, I think they would probably play to get warm a little bit, but then you would see him sitting much of this, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't know. I know LeBron has always long talked about wanting to play. He's sort of done a shift as people have pulled back and taken games off. LeBron has played more. And I think one of the reasons he's felt the need to do that is because he feels like when he comes to, you know, a city one night in a year that a fan may have bought tickets and driven 3 hours, he doesn't want to let that fan down. He has talked about that a lot. Well, there's no fans here. And the television viewers will get to see him plenty. So I would expect that he would not play all eight games. I'll be interested to see how many games Kawhi plays. Kawhi is really focused on saving up his energy and has no problem with, I have no idea how many he's going to play. I do think that there could be a benefit to some teams who've had some continuity. Let me just bring up two teams where I think continuity could be really interesting. One is the Toronto Raptors, who have, as far as I know, avoided anybody getting sick and have been practicing together every day since late June because they had to clear out of Canada and they didn't want to worry about getting across the border. And they went to Naples and started their own bubble several weeks in advance. They are churning along championship DNA. They don't have Kawhi, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of guys resting for them. I think you're going to see them power through, and that could make a difference while these other stars are going to rest. And I want to point out Oklahoma City Thunder in the West. Again, as far as I'm fairly confident, none of their players have tested positive. They've had their whole group, and they have Chris Paul, who's leading the charge. And so while I'm going to sit here and say I understand if Kawhi takes off three of the seeding games because, you know, they're not going to probably catch the Lakers, if LeBron takes off a game or two or Anthony Davis takes off a game or two, the Lakers have lost several players. They're bringing in new players. The Clippers are down, I think, three players. At least one of them has said it's due to the virus. The other ones, we don't know for sure, but you can make a reasonable guesstimation. I think that there may be some value in establishing some continuity in those eight games, even if some of the stars skip that, saving for the playoffs.
Plenty of great stuff to keep an eye on in that regard as we get ready for the ramp up here. The pre-bubble bubble working out, perchance, for the Toronto Raptors. You can follow them on Twitter at WinhorseESPN. Brian, thank you for the time as always.
Thanks, Brian.
Congrats to the Golic family. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate that.
Appreciate that. Golic and Wingo reminding you that 30 for 30 podcast in association with ESPNW presents its latest season, Heavy Metals Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire. The 7-part series tells the story of Bella and Marta Caroli, the coaches who brought women's gymnastics in the U.S. to absolute dominance on the world stage and also enabled its greatest tragedy. Listen now to all 7 episodes of Heavy Metals Inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Coming up next, some college coaches are continuing to get the benefit of the doubt. Now might be a good time for that to stop.
Players who express interest will be subject to a background check. That'll be cut up, Cliff. Thanks.
Cliff, drop that one.
It's Golic and Wingo.
We really are going to empty the clip on a lot of those.
You know, is it cool? Seriously? I mean.
So here's the way I look at it here is, ever since you made the announcement that these are going to be your last 8.5, eight shows now on ESPN Radio in this morning time slot, there's been such an outpouring of kindness and support.
People have been so nice, except for anybody associated with this show.
Well, because we can't let you get too big of a head in all this one here, right? Like, that's the worry even around our family, is all this kindness is going to somehow go to your head in this situation. So we got to balance the scales, balanced as all things should be. We are the Thanos of your life.
You're worried about me getting a big head. I'm being taken off the show.
Yeah, no, listen, but you know what? You never know here. This stuff can turn on a dime.
I see. Okay.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News here. We are brought to you by Blue Emu. Maximum pain relief works fast and you won't stink. It's pharmacist recommended odor-free pain relief for muscle pain, backache, strains, sprains, or even arthritis. There's no stinging or burning involved. It's simple pain relief. Blue Emu Maximum pain relief works fast and you won't stink. So some of the news that we saw yesterday surrounding the Iowa Hawkeyes football program. Remember going back to this time, really, this summer in college football, where we saw a lot of athletes using their voice to air out some of the problems that right. have been going on behind the scenes. Iowa is a place that saw James Daniels, a center with the Chicago Bears, former Iowa offensive lineman, kind of leading a charge of former players saying, yeah, black people never really felt comfortable around here in that culture. Well, I saw this on .com. Adam Rittenberg talked about this. A 2019 internal report about Iowa's athletic program outlined several allegations of racial discrimination against black athletes, including inequitable discipline policies, verbal harassment, and a double standard and expectation to conform to white culture. This after Hawkeye Nation on Monday published the full report that was found of the Iowa Diversity Task Force that was formed by Athletic Director Gary Barta in 2018 as a response to the low graduation rates among black male athletes at the school. And so they commissioned this report that talked to a number of officials, coaches, and players inside of Iowa's athletic department in 2018. They got the 9-page report and put it in front of the Iowa football team
right.
in the early in 2019. This document outlines a lot of the same problems that we heard echoed and brought up by players in this summer, which means that as Kirk Ferentz and a lot of the folks around Iowa got up and acted surprised initially in the reaction of all this, they had already kind of known a lot of this information. And we had Bomani Jones on earlier in the show who talked about why this was kind of allowed to skate earlier in this and has to go back to the benefit of the doubt that we give to a lot of these coaches.
We're so inclined to give people like Kirk Ferentz the benefit of the doubt that all he really had to do was sit in there in that first press conference and be like, "Ooh, wow, my bad. I didn't know." We were like, okay, well, Kirk didn't know. And then we come to find out we got paperwork that Kirk did, in fact, know what was going on and apparently seemed to believe that just by letting dudes wear earrings and hoodies that everything would be fixed. Like, that was what he thought. He was like, man, you know, we just had to let them wear the earrings, so I thought that everything there was okay. And it clearly was not. And it really bothered me when I saw that there had been a report previously, because Ferentz basically got up at that press conference and lied to everybody when he had it a couple months ago, because he acted so shocked that all these players would have these feelings and then share them, when in reality, he knew that they had these feelings. In fact, he would have been better served if he had gotten up at that press conference a couple months ago and said, yes, we knew that the players felt this way. We looked into this and we started doing some things, but we got some more steps to take. Instead, he just acted like, whoa, really? This is what's going on?
So he actually made a couple of changes, but then faulted himself. He said, this was my fault. I didn't follow up. I said I'd follow up the players, and I didn't follow up with them. And this is one thing that I've learned. And over the years, so many things from my time in locker rooms and dealing with organizations is I was always, you take care of things in-house. You know, if you have a problem, you go find that person, you talk to them face to face, and you try and solve things that way. And once we started the whole social media era, there are times over these 23 years where I said, boy, I hate when people air things out publicly like that. And what I have learned, used in a correct, because there are times it's used horribly, don't get me wrong, but there are times when it's used correctly, it forces people to look at what they're doing and doesn't let them hide it. Because how many times while I was playing and through my era, you would talk to a coach or talk to someone above you in management and they would give you the yeah, 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 and then nothing would happen. Everything was swept under the rug. Here, now these players in this particular case for this particular reason are speaking out, and it's forcing these coaches and these schools to take a hard look at what's going on. And that's good. Again, when used in the proper way, we've seen a lot of proper ways of it being used and people being held accountable for things they were just sweeping under the rug and or didn't even think was a problem at all till they're made aware of it.
And I think that was the one of the, I mean, there's a lot of tough to read about in this report if you have time, and good job by the Hawkeye Nation for getting this report. But just seeing, all right, you were new about this problem, you started making changes, and then Kirk Ferentz said last week, just kind of forgot to go back to it until they were held accountable. The importance of that medium for players can't be understated. Coming up next, though, what can't be overstated is the advantage and the benefit that might go to two former MVPs starting this NFL season.